They don't build them like they used to, a familiar expression that can refer to just about anything these days, but it has special meaning for my guest David Naylor. For the past 10 years, Naylor has written and lectured about the grand old movie palaces that were built during the 20s and 30s in the cities and small towns of America. His new book, Great American Movie Theaters, is a state-by-state guide to those picture palaces that remain standing. Naylor has traveled more than 100,000 miles for his research and along the way discovered some wonders of the past.
There's one in Kalamazoo, Michigan that is an atmospheric-style theater with the stars and clouds on the ceiling. And it's funny that you find these places in the most out-of-the-way parts of the country, in Montana and Idaho. There's an Egyptian theater in Idaho. Why would they build Egyptian in Idaho? I don't know, but it's the kind of wonderful surprise that has kept me traveling over the years.
How did you get interested in the architecture of movie theaters?
Well, that's a good question, because the architecture of movie theaters is not something that's commonly considered a subject for study. I studied architecture when I was in college, and these buildings were never discussed. This was not something that people thought of when you were talking about serious architecture, but after I graduated, I was out in the West Coast in Oakland, California, and a theater there had been renovated for the Oakland Symphony Orchestra. Beautifully done, just knocked me over with all the gold plaster work, the ceiling grills, the colors, the lighting. Everything was just something out of a book of designs that just were amazing to me.
A lot of the movie theaters from the 1920s were quite extravagant, and they were real expensive productions. Owners could have gotten away with a lot less. What was the theater owner's reasons for wanting such ornate design?
I think it was just to outdo the theater down the road. The first theaters were pretty simple affairs, just the screen and seats, but once they started putting up fancy fronts, everyone had to put up something a little more glamorous. It was like building an amusement park in a city center.
It was the motto of one of the theater chains that we sell tickets to theaters, not movies.
Yes, Marcus Lowe, who built quite a few theaters around the eastern side. His theaters almost pale in comparison to the theaters out in California built in the 30s, but there are quite a few around that could still compete with anything you could see in European concert halls. Places like the Midland in Kansas City, just pure golden Baroque.
Let's talk about some of the features in some of the wonderful large movie palaces that were built probably in the 1920s for the most part. They had really large lobbies, whereas nowadays the theaters have really small lobbies, just big enough to accommodate the candy counter. What was the reason for having such enormous lobbies?
Believe it or not, it was a practical reason. You had to have room for the people who were waiting to see the next show. They put up the brass rails out there for standee rails, they called them, to kind of keep people in line, and you had to keep people interested while they were waiting for the movie, so that's why they built these magnificent lobby spaces with fountains and marble pillars. It just was part of the show again. But it was to control the circulation. These places had traffic patterns that I think Grand Central Station would be proud to have.
Well, that brings us to the ushers. The Roxy, for instance, had in New York, had ushers dressed in uniforms, and they would be drilled, I think, when they signed up as ushers.
Yes.
And how to behave.
Yes, I think the Marine Corps found a suitable place for its retirees in these places. A lot of the theaters had training corps for their ushers, everything from fingernail checks to shoe polish requirements. They were in control. They had panels of lights that would tell the ushers what seats were open in which parts of the theater so that patrons could be directed to a given staircase to find a seat.
Even the lounges, even the restrooms were ornate in a lot of the theaters. I think my favorite example of that from your book is the King Tut throne in the ladies' lounge of the Atlanta Fox.
Yes, some of these things are still around, too. You walk into these lounges and you see fireplaces, fine furniture that I don't know how it's left behind, but in the Chicago theater in downtown Chicago, there's sort of an Egyptian feel, which has nothing to do with the rest of the theater. That was one of the wonderful things about these places, is you find a safari room, lounge in a Baroque theater, you'd find something like the Egyptian Room in Atlanta. It didn't matter. It was just another part of the show, and the styles could change from floor to floor.
It's wonderful because in a lot of ways it had the same kind of gaudiness and vulgarity that the movies did. You know, it's not the real thing. It's not the real European opera house architecture or real ancient Egypt. It's a fabulous
fantasy,
gaudy,
yes,
imitation of all of it.
Yes.
What was the decline of these great theaters?
Oh, pretty much the same things that hit the American city: flight to the suburbs, the sort of urban renewal binge of the 60s. The land these places were originally built on were prime city blocks, and as the office high rises were going up across America, these pieces of property became just too valuable to have a small movie theater, a movie palace on them. The use was not enough to justify the land, in effect. It's a shame because now the places that are saved are serving as the centerpieces of downtown restoration efforts. So it has come full circle that these places are valued and can revitalize the cities that they were seen as blocking 20 years earlier.
One of the things that I think we lost when we stopped having these large palaces to see movies in is the sense of public palaces, the sense of beautiful and ornate architecture that everybody, no matter how rich or poor, could share in.
There's another famous quote, George Rapp, one of the Rapp and Rapp brothers who built most of the theaters around Chicago and around the country for the Paramount chain, said that these places were built as a shrine to democracy, that everyone could partake of the opulence, and that goes back again to the European concert hall model, where these places were meant for everyone. It was every man's palace. People talk about a man's home being a castle. This was the public castle.
Yeah, I know. I get really depressed when I pass an old movie theater, and it's now an outlet for discount clothing.
Yes, and it still tears at the heart. I'm sure more of the people who actually were at these theaters when they were showing movies, but it's close as to whether it's better that it's saved as a discount movie house or a paint store as opposed to still showing movies. It's not as if some of them can't be put back, however, and that's the hope.
Before, you said that when you started becoming interested in movie theaters, that they weren't taken very seriously in architectural circles. Do you think that's changed?
I think that the fact that some of the better-known architects of today are working on the renovations of these places shows that there's definitely been a change in the attitudes toward these buildings. People like Hardy Holtzman Pfeiffer work on theater restoration efforts in places like Madison, Wisconsin. The whole idea of what constitutes architecture has changed in the last 10, 15 years.
When you travel around the country, do you always make a point of stopping in the best movie theaters?
I like to. I thought that when I first started working on theater 6 or 7 years ago, this would be a great way to see all the movies I've ever wanted. But at that time, most of the theaters were closed, or the lucky few were undergoing restoration. But I visit them as often as I can. It's kind of like seeing friends around the country.
If you could revive any theater, bring any theater back to life that's already been demolished, which one would it be?
There was a theater out in Portland, Oregon, the Oriental. When I was researching these places, I saw pictures of it, and I just couldn't wait to get out there and see this place. And someone broke the news to me that it had been gone for quite a while. It had elephants on the walls just growing out of the cornice line. Had a mask with green eyes above the stage. I think that would be the one.
David, thanks for talking with us.
I appreciate your interest.
David Naylor is the author of Great American Movie Theaters, published by Preservation Press in Washington, D.C.